Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're calm, we're local, and always supported by our local sponsors, including our friends at DeHarka with the Wake and Bake, which I finished off last night, the coffee ice cream. Don Moeller's about ready for a second shipment of this local, delicious, made-in-Baltimore DeHarka ice cream. Also, our friends at State Fair and at Fadley's, both in Catonsville soon after the storm during the summer. And, of course, you can ship those crab cakes from Fadley's anywhere in the world. Don, we've been wanting to have this congressman on for a long, long time. I know you tracked him down here in the summer. I know it's a shame we're not getting together for some shrimp and grits out at the State Fair, but I want you to do the honors on this segment because this guy's fresh off the news, right?
Fresh off the news, out there fighting the good fight every day. And, Nestor, you always said in the beginning of Baltimore Positive you wanted to have smart people, so I'm hoping that Harvard grad, editor of the Harvard Law Review, checks that box for you, and it's a pleasure to welcome 8th District Congressman Jamie Raskin. Jamie, welcome to Baltimore Positive.
Good morning, Don. Thank you for having me on.
Well, look, man, I'm not going to schmooze you up too much, but I mean, I almost want to move out to the farm just so I can vote for you because I can't vote for your. I'm good with the 7th. We vote here, but I always stand proud when I see you and see Maryland when I started to investigate several years ago who you were and the work you're doing. And certainly this week you showed up with Dr. Anthony Fauci as well as a CDC appointee and had some very, very pointed questions on behalf of the American people, and I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate your saying that. I think my role was that of like a, almost like a deprogrammer for the country because there's been so much cultish-style brainwashing that people don't know the most basic essential instructions to follow, and the president keeps confusing the picture by sending all kinds of mixed signals about masking, about social distancing, about huge events with lots of people not wearing masks and so on, and I wanted to use the few minutes I had with Dr. Fauci to get him to refute a lot of the disinformation that's been spreading around the highest levels of government.
Well, James, Congressman, I'd like to jump in there, and I actually want to turn the tables on you a little bit. I want to play Congressman Raskin, and I want you to play Dr. Fauci, and I want to spit your questions back at you. You started with the whole premise that a pack of papers is not a plan. Tell our listeners what you mean, because we keep hearing, we've got a plan, and here you are, and you're saying, guys, a pack of papers does not a plan make. Talk to us what you meant by that.
Well, look, no matter what line of work you're in or what kind of sports you've played in your life, everybody understands that there's no chance for victory if you don't have a strategy for victory, and there's no general who's ever taken us into war without a plan and a strategy and succeeded in winning. And you've got to go in with that mentality with COVID-19. And what that means is you've got to have a strategy not to respond to it, not to manage it, but to go in and defeat the disease. And what that means is you determine who's got it. You isolate and quarantine those people, obviously in a humane and supportive way. Then you determine exactly who they've been in contact with over the last 2 weeks. And then you get to those people and you tell them they may have been exposed and they've got to quarantine until, you know, we can determine whether or not they've had it. And that requires aggressive testing, contact tracing. You got to be like a detective to go and determine what's out there. And instead, we've got this, like, Mardi Gras strategy, laissez-les bon temps rouler, you know, whatever anybody wants to do, go to the bars, go to the restaurants, go to the beaches, don't wear a mask. And predictably, you know, all of these governors down south, like Governor DeSantis in Florida, who I used to serve with on the House Judiciary Committee, who were bragging about what a great condition they were in compared to New York and New Jersey, are now the new New York and New Jersey. They're suffering it. This disease doesn't discriminate according to your political party or your ideology. There's no ideological immunity to getting COVID-19. And there's also no religious free exercise exemption from public health orders, which is the fight I've been having with Jim Jordan from the beginning. He thinks that somehow the First Amendment of the United States means that churches and mosques and synagogues and other, you know, religious organizations and do whatever they want. That's just not right. I mean, if there's a hurricane coming and there's a public health order for people to stay at home, that applies to churches as well as to political party conventions and restaurants and bars and so on, you know. So we've had a number of religious assemblies that have become super spreader events. And I mean, this is a huge crisis. We're leading the world in COVID-19 cases. We're leading the world in COVID-19 death count. And there are large parts of the country where it's just spreading out of control. And it's all because the president has spread this propaganda about the disease is magically going to disappear. The disease is a hoax. Children can't really get it because they're mostly immune. All of these fraudulent claims that, you know, I used my time to try to get Dr. Fauci to debunk, and he did. But I think, you know, he always runs the risk of getting in trouble with the president. And that happened to Dr. Birx today, who also got reprimanded and castigated by the president for contradicting him. I mean, he's got a new interview out with Axios, which is not to be believed, where he said that America is doing better than the rest of the world. I mean, America is in the worst condition. We've got 5% of the world's population. We got 25% of the world's cases. And like we're saying, there is no strategy. There's no plan to turn it around. So, you know, at this point, it's very difficult. But if I were the president, I would just say, I would admit, we have completely messed up. We have been totally reckless and negligent here. But what we need to do is to keep everybody inside for a 2-week or 3-week period. Let's figure out where it is and let's start over again and use the testing and the contact tracing to try to get the disease on the run. But the alternative is, you know, according to the public health authorities, we could lose another 100, 200, 300,000 people before the end of the year. I mean, that's shocking.
Well, Congressman, it seems to me that part of the problem with the president's narrative is that whether you're in a red state or a blue state, individuals across the country are having the same experience that I'm about to describe to you. And that is, I know a young family in Baltimore County who has young twins, and last week had some scratchy throats and a slight fever, nothing, but they thought, uh-oh, we better take them in and get them tested for COVID. There are other children in the family. They go to summer care. So they take them in last week, and here we are a week later, and they still don't have results. I think that gets to your point. At that point, that testing is pretty irrelevant, is it not?
Yeah. This is why I was surprised to hear Dr. Gregoire from HHS testifying that half of the people get their results within 24 hours. That does not square at all with what I'm hearing from my constituents and the reports from around the country. I mean, you know, here's the thing. The federal government, rather than coordinating a strategy, which is what I'd advocated with Donna Shalala from the beginning, you know, she was Secretary of HHS under Clinton, and we introduced legislation called the Reopen America Act, and we said, look, the federal government has got to coordinate the logistics of this thing so the states are not pitted against each other in this brutal competition for ventilators and for reagents and for, you know, the PPP equipment. You know, we need the federal government to determine how can we come up with a test? Is there a test where people can get the results on the spot that's cheap and that we can distribute around the country? What are the scientists saying? But, you know, we have this catch-as-catch-can haphazard approach where every state is doing something different. That's what Dr. Fauci testified about. He said, we have no coherence to a national strategy. And what we did when it started back in March and April began to work, the problem is that the base of numbers was so high because it had spun out of control that, you know, even when we began to get it under control, like in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, with the original hotspot, suddenly it's on fire in Florida, in Arizona, in Texas. That's the problem. And now, you know, we've got to reverse all of the brainwashing of people, you know, about the disease. I mean, there are people who, you know, think it's like the flu, it's like sniffles, this is a hoax, and all that kind of Fox News propaganda is really scary.
Well, you say reverse the brainwashing, Congressman. I mean, the last 4 years for a constitutional law person, and most people just go to D.C. Jim Jordan's a wrestling coach who went to D.C. You grew up in D.C. I mean, this is the land you've played on forever. To see it at this point, 40 miles away from Baltimore where I am, and to see this emanate day by day, the lies, I mean, just the Axios is just the most recent thing where we're not being taken seriously around the world. And as a guy with a passport that's traveled a little bit, I have grave concerns for where this thing goes when Joe Biden wins and says we need to shut the country down, because that seems to be the answer elsewhere. Is until we do that, or until we come up with vaccines, and the day we have a vaccine, we're still, I don't know, 200 million vaccines away from fixing everyone, right? So this... I think a lot of people think this is a short-term issue. The NFL is trying to get through this. I'm in the sports business. We're trying to get through this. This is a 2-3-4-year issue, and what happened to our GDP should be alarming to anyone. But I think the stock market has sort of artificially kept up some hopes in various parts of the community leading into this election.
Well, I mean, the stock market is afloat simply because of the government and the Fed basically bailing out Wall Street. It's kind of like what happened after the mortgage meltdown crisis of 2008. But when you say, you know, it's a 2-3-4-year process, that's heartbreaking, because in fact, it's a 2-3-4-week process. I mean, had we actually said the entire country needs to shut down for a 1 month long period, and then we will be able to surgically determine where the disease is, move in quickly, contain it, control it, reverse it, fight it, we would be where the European countries are now, which is they have got the disease on the run, and they are able to reopen, and people are going to movies and restaurants and so on. They're all masked, and the masking is absolutely essential to prevent further outbreaks. But they know who's got the disease and where it is, and all the numbers are moving in the right direction. Our numbers are moving in the wrong direction. We've got what the epidemiologists call community spread, which is it is being spread by people out there, sometimes pre-symptomatically, sometimes asymptomatically, without anybody's knowledge or understanding. And we're acting like there's nothing that can be done. But in fact, there are a few very simple core principles here, which if we would obey them, would allow us to get out of the nightmare. And so it should not be, you know, a 2-3-4-year process. I mean, really, we can get this thing down to 2 or 3 months if we take the radical action that's necessary. But, you know, the reason why America's in a different situation is we've not had the social cohesion and we've not had the political leadership. And we've had this constant onslaught of disinformation and propaganda about the disease. And you're right. Washington, look, was always known as the spin zone, but what was being spun was the actual facts. There was some agreement upon what the facts were, and then everybody would bring their own ideological interpretation to the game. Well, now we have completely different sets of facts that are operating. If you watch Fox News, there are entire things that we've talked about today that they never would have heard of, that they would not understand. There is no consciousness among the Fox News viewership that America is an absolute outlier in terms of COVID-19 around the world. People would not understand that most of the European and Asian governments have got it down to an extremely low level compared to America. While we're losing more than 1,000 people a day, more than 1,000 people a day are dying here. And you go to the European and Asian countries, and it's, you know, 25, 30, 40 people. You know, it's extremely low numbers compared to what's happening in the U.S.
Well, and then, Congressman, in the midst of all this, we have these almost daily assaults on what many of us would think had been just pretty traditional approaches to the rule of law. And I'll take, for example, the recent pardon of Roger Stone, convicted by a jury, sentenced by a judge. Even in that case, even Attorney General Barr, I think, called it a righteous conviction. The president steps up then and pardons his friend pretty much after his friend says, "I know a lot," wink, wink, and I think we know what that means. That prompted you and others to say we needed to take a new look at presidential pardon power. As a constitutional scholar, educate Nestor, me, and our listeners on what you mean by that.
Well, look, let me just say a word first about the case. I mean, let me say a word about Flynn and a word about Stone. I mean, Michael Flynn pled guilty multiple times to lying to the vice president and then to federal investigators about his contact with Russian officials, including Ambassador Kislyak, and what he told them. He also pled guilty to failing to register as a foreign agent and was forced to resign. You think that would be the end of it, but no. Attorney General Barr has spent his time essentially trying to resurrect and rehabilitate Michael Flynn. Now, Roger Stone is, a bottom feeder of the political ecosystem, just spends his time lying and trafficking in conspiracies and all this kind of stuff. And by pardoning him for his obstruction of justice and his lying, the president is essentially saying he is going to take care of witnesses who refuse to blow the whistle on him and refuse to tell the truth. So that's a corrupt use of the pardon power. There's not too much we can do. We can legislate around the edges of it. It is there are certain parts of the pardon power which make it absolute to the president. However, the president cannot sell pardons. That is bribery. I mean, arguably, if he sold a pardon to someone, the pardon would be effective, but he could still be prosecuted for bribery, and so could the person who paid for it. And, of course, the president cannot pardon himself. I mean, that violates the cardinal principle of our rule of law, which James Madison expressed as, "No man shall be a judge in his own case." That is not the purpose of the pardon power, to allow the president to absolve himself for any crimes, past, present, or future, so that it operates like a get-out-of-jail-free card. And if you polled that, like 80 or 90% of the people say, of course the president can't pardon himself. So we did have a hearing. I introduced an amendment just to restate at that point the implicit constitutional limitation that pardoning, almost by definition, semantically, is for other people. You can't pardon yourself. Unfortunately, you know, that became partisan too, and the Republicans refused to go along with that and are, you know, hanging on to the idea that it is absolutely unlimited and absolute, which of course would mean that the president can go on eBay and just start selling pardons to people. And why not, if the president can do whatever he wants? That can't be right. That's not the purpose of the pardon power.
Congressman Jamie Raskin is our guest from Maryland's 8th out west. He's with us for a few more minutes. I'd be remiss if I don't give you a little bit of oxygen on the election and the dismantling of the United States postal system in trying to hoodwink an election. I don't know what else to say. I mean, I'm appalled. I'm aghast on a daily basis. I'm happy that we have people like you out there on the wall down there in D.C. trying to fight for all of this against the likes of Jim Jordan. Thoughts about the election, where this is going to go, when clearly the President of the United States doesn't know the difference between an absentee ballot and a mail-in ballot. Of course, there is no difference.
Well, the Trump administration and the right wing have been trying to dismantle the post office since they first got in, which is a tragic thing. I mean, the post office is in the Constitution. That is an explicit constitutional directive and power assigned to Congress. There's a great book called How the Post Office Built America, and about how the postal supply routes and the post roads were the beginning of the national transportation infrastructure and national communications infrastructure. And so many of our newspapers also have names like the Washington Post, because the news industry also grew up around the existence of the post office. And the post office has played an important role in creating opportunity for women, for African Americans, and for other minorities at points when there's been just discrimination and every other door shut to them. So the right wing has been after the post office for a long time. They're especially after it now because of COVID-19, because of the president's lethal incompetence and recklessness. We need to use mail-in balloting, and we need to use absentee balloting in order to let our people vote. In Maryland, more than 90% of the people sent in the mail ballots that they had received in mail. Unfortunately, Governor Hogan is complicating needlessly the whole process by, instead of sending everybody a ballot, sending everybody essentially an invitation to apply for a ballot, which just multiplies all of the bureaucracy and the opportunity for things to go wrong. But in any event, the post office is going to be central and crucial. And so the president has been sending his operatives over to the post office. And we are going to need our great postal unions, like the letter carriers and the American Postal Workers Union and so on, to blow the whistle about things going on that would undermine the integrity of the ballot and the ability of the post office to both deliver the ballots and receive them. It's like we are in a constant tug of war between the real democracy, which wants to continue and thrive, and then the government under Donald Trump, where he's doing everything in his power to prevent us from doing the things that we need to do to maintain the continuity of government. So, you know, we just have, I think it's 93 days today left to go. We've got to struggle every single day to protect the post office and to guarantee the integrity of this election against all comers, domestic and foreign, who are going to try to, you know, interrupt with the will of the majority.
Do you see any scenario this time next year where Joe Biden's president, we're getting out of this coronavirus, where Donald Trump will be prosecuted in some way? Do you believe that that will ever happen?
I mean, what I want to say about that is, I want to rewind to before Donald Trump, where we understood it was not the role of the president or all the president's men to be deciding who gets prosecuted and who doesn't. We had such a wall of separation between the presidency and the Department of Justice. And that was like a long prized goal and value of the Department of Justice, to be independent from political control and manipulation. So I guess what I would say is, you know, look, this president is a one-man crime wave. You know, I mean, he wakes up like the mob bosses do and starts, you know, interfering with the rule of law and violating constitutional and legal boundaries. But I don't think that that should be the agenda of the new administration. The Department of Justice and the prosecutors should follow where the facts take them on a whole host of criminal events that they've been notified about. But really, we've got such an overdue agenda here. We've got the opioid crisis, which the administration's done nothing about. We've got the COVID-19 crisis, where we need a real plan and a real strategy. Overhanging everything, we've got the nightmare of climate change, which the president has basically made us an international environmental outlaw state with respect to. I mean, he withdrew us from the Paris Climate Accord, and we are a pariah state in terms of the rest of the world. So we've got to take on this daily war against science and against the facts and against data. We've got to restore basic respect for the truth and objectivity in the country.
Well stated.
Nestor, what do you think? We have to have the congressman back on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Next time we'll have a whole bunch of questions for you know, regarding Jim Jordan and other things and gerrymandering and all sorts of things. We just want to live long enough. Stay on the wall and keep doing the right thing for us, Congressman. We appreciate you.
Well, I very much appreciate what you guys are doing. An active, vibrant press is not the enemy of the people. It's the people's best friend. Thomas Jefferson knew it, who said, you know, if you ask me to choose between a government without a newspaper or a newspaper without a government, I would not hesitate a moment to choose the latter. So thank you for keeping free speech and free discourse and the facts alive.
And you got me looking up books by Winifred Gallagher, too. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Congressman.
All the best to you guys. Bye-bye.
Have a great day.
Congressman Jamie Raskin from Maryland's 8th. You can look him up on the interweb in a long chat with Dr. Anthony Fauci. You can find that on C-SPAN out on the net. Baltimore Positive rolling along. All of our sponsors. Big appreciation for Jeff Moeller and Moeller & Gary Realty. Selling homes, listing homes, wearing a mask, doing it 6.5 feet away and getting it done. Sometimes listing them and selling them the same day. Find them at Moeller and Gary. Don't forget to ship those crab cakes via Fadley's anywhere in the United States. Tough thing. We talk about the post office. They'll still get the crab cakes there overnight for anyone in the United States. You go to Fadley's up on the web and ship them. Also, our friends at State Fair. My wife and I went out last week, sampled those delicious lamb chops they had there and the burrata salad with the strawberry. Summertime, doing it right there and opening El Guapo across the street very, very soon in Catonsville. We're going to check in with Evan Brown sometime soon as well. Don't forget our friends at Taharka. I'm holding up the Honey Graham ice cream. I officially ran out of Honey Graham on Monday night this week. The Honey Graham and the Graham Cracker Swirl made in Baltimore, serving up social change a scoop at a time. Awaken those taste buds, baby. Taharka, made in Baltimore. On behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller, I am Nestor Aparicio. You can reach me, Nasty, at WNST.net. We're doing a little bit of sports. The Orioles, the Ravens, trying to wash our hands, wear a mask, and stay safe. We are WNST.net, AM 1570. Calm, local, and always Baltimore positive.